This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, right. Okay, Parshas Kisetze. So, a few offerings on the sheet tonight. The first one goes to the very beginning of our parsha. The parsha begins Kisetze la milchoma al oivecho. We're again talking about war. Now, it's very interesting because this is a theme that has continued from last week's parasha. In Parasha Shoftim, there were many aspects of war that were discussed. The pasuk says in last week's sedra, Kitzeis la milchoma levecho, and it talks about the Mashuach milchoma, v'hoik korvechem la milchoma, when you get close to war, v'nigash hakoyen v'dibe el ha'om. And the Kohen, known as the Mashuach Milchoma, he's anointed for this purpose, to give the big talk before they go to battle, and he goes and speaks to the people. And he speaks to them and he tells them various halachas. Now, so you see that this week's parasha begins with a continuation of the theme of last week's parasha, which is war. All aspects of war. Number one, the Mashuach Milchoma speaking and giving the prep talk, telling certain people they can go home, etc. You have Hashchosa Silonis. The pasuk says, "Losash says Eitzel in Doach Olav Garzim Kimenu Seichel Va'Eitzel Leisichres." You can't destroy a fruit tree, which is the famous halach of not destroying fruit trees in last week's sedra. That's talking about battle. When you go into battle, don't just randomly, unnecessarily destroy fruit trees. And then, strangely, in the middle of last week's parsha, in the middle of this topic of war, you have the Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa means seemingly not connected to war. You have an unidentified person who's been killed, and there's a whole procedure. You've got to measure the nearest town, and the rabbonim of that town have got to come along and make sure there's a proper burial, and they take responsibility for it. And now that's the parasha of Egla Rufa. And then this week's parasha, Kisei Sila Melchoma Levecho. The question is, three questions. Question number one, what is Egla Rufa in last week's parasha? Why is it placed in the middle of the various topics about war? So then you've got the Mashuach Milchama talking about the prep talk, the big speech before they go to battle. You've got destroying the fruit trees in war. And then you've got Egla Rufa, seemingly nothing to do with battle. And then you've got this week's Pasha, Kisei Sal Micholam Alavecho. That's question number one. What has Egla Rufa got to do with anything? Number two. Also in last week's Pasha, the Mashuach Milchama, he sets out two exceptions. One exception is anyone who is scared. The pasuk says, "V'hoyk korvechem milchoma." He says, "V'nigash hakoyim medibel ha'om al yerech levavchem al tiru," and they can go home. Someone who is too scared, who is nervous, can go home. The next set of exceptions, the famous three. Number one, the person who just got married, the person who built a new home, and the person who built a vineyard. The pasuk says, "Mi hoyesh shebona bayis chodosh." He should go home. Person who built a vineyard, he should go home. Or someone who just got married. Again, yelech v'yeshiv lebeisei. Fine. Two questions on this. Question number one. I'm always worried about that. I'm always troubled by it. The Mashuach Milchama is standing up. He's giving this big speech. And he's telling people, these people who are someone who is too timid and scared, they can go home. And people who have just got married, planted a vineyard, or built a house, they can also go home. But why schlep them there in the first place? Why didn't he just tell them in advance that those people who just got married, built a vineyard, built a house, don't need to come to the battleground? Why bring them there to make the speech and then send them home again? You know, you can just send them an email, write a letter to them, tell them they're exempted, end of story. And a further question is, they seem quite strange exceptions. You know, I can understand the first category, someone who is scared and timid, they're a liability in battle. But someone who just got married, planted a vineyard, built a house, it seems, try getting off jury service nowadays and say that I can't come because I've just built a vineyard. It's not going to work. So what exactly is this about? So I came across, and I forget where I heard it, but I came across the following answer. When the Torah is discussing battle, the Torah wants to remind us that battle has lots of repercussions, many of them very negative. There's death, there's pain, there's injury. But a key problem with battle is we lose the value of human life. It becomes sort of debased in our eyes. That's the reality. I mean, at the moment, when we, 6 months ago, whenever it was, when the Ukraine war began, it was everyone, I think we all felt much more strongly about it. But now there's what's called war fatigue. That I heard recently that you can't put it on the news too much because people don't want to hear about it. In other words, we become so, as it were, bored, fatigued with it, we don't want to hear too much. You know, we hear tragically of more deaths and injuries. We become a little bit desensitized to it. So it happens today in the 21st century. So the problem with war is that we lose sensitivity to human life. With that sort of concern, the Torah is telling us the following. I want the Mashiach Milchama to go out and to tell the people, to give them the speech, that sometimes, sadly, war is a necessary evil in life. That sometimes you have to actually do battle. But I don't want you to lose sight of human life or the importance of what life is all about. Don't think it's normal. And therefore, the Mashiach Milchama stands up and he gives a pep talk. He gives a pep talk saying the importance of being courageous and doing this unnecessary, this necessary evil. But he brings all the people there to make sure that he makes the speech and he says, those people who've just got married, who've just built a house, just built a vineyard, you can go home. Why did he make them, schlep them there and not just tell them at the outset, don't bother coming? Because he wants to give a message, not for them, but for the people who are staying in battle. The message is, life is actually about building families, homes, working Hashem's land. So the message is not for those people, but it's the message for the people who are staying in battle. And that's why you have Eglah Arufa as well. Eglah Arufa, this Nebuch, this corpse that is, no one knows who he is. So we're telling the people, in the parasha of Milchama, the Torah then discusses Eglah Arufa. Because we want you to know that even an unidentified corpse, we're going to take care of it. Because the value of human life is so important that this is prayer, this is a devastation. There's an unidentified corpse. We're going to make sure, we're going to find out, we're going to measure up, the nearest town can take responsibility, the Rabbonim have got to get involved. I'll tell you something fascinating. I heard this morning, Rabbi Meir came to school, he said something very, very interesting. Kahuna is hereditary. Yeah, if a person is a Kohen, his son's a Kohen, that's how it works. The exception is the Mashiach Milchama. He's a Kohen. V'nigash HaKohen v'dibel ha'om. He's anointed for this purpose. But the son of the Kohen Mashiach isn't necessarily a Mashiach Milchama. It's not a hereditary position. With other positions of Kohuna, it's all hereditary. But not the Mashiach Milchama. Why not? Why isn't it hereditary? Why isn't the son of the Mashiach Milchama, who's anointed to give the speeches before war, his son should do the same job? Kohuna is hereditary. The answer is, when you go to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Kohen is working and serving in the Beis HaMikdash, our hopes, our dreams are that my children will take over my position. We want him to also serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But we don't want the son of the Mashiach Milchama. My hopes and dreams are not that he's going to stand up in battle and make the speech. We don't want him to make any speeches. We don't want there to be battles. We prefer a world without war. And therefore, the position of the Mashiach Milchama is not hereditary. And therefore, we can answer our three questions. What's the connection between Eglah Arufa and war? Because Eglah Arufa is teaching me that life is important. And don't, you know, be flippant even about an unidentified corpse. Why make them come out and send them home? Because I want to give chizuk for the people and a reminder for the people who are there, who are going into battle, that life is actually, you know, we value building over destroying. Like I said, we value people and all their contributions, even though we recognize the sad and occasional need for war. And that's why these three exceptions, which all represent some sort of building and contributing to society, that's why we're giving reminder of the time of the value of human life. Okay, now let's press on. We then have in this week's parsha the Ben Sora Omora, a very difficult parsha. The Ben Sora Omora, the wayward, rebellious son. The Rashi says, the Ben Sora Omora, says Rashi, it's on the first box in paragraph 2, or Ben Sora Omora, Neherag al Shem Sofai. He's killed because of the end that is the trajectory that he's sort of heading towards. Higia Torah to Sof Daito, the Torah ascertains where this fellow is heading. Sof Shemachale Momna Oviv, he'll end up dissipating his parents' money, and he needs his quotient, his portion, his quota of meat and wine, and he can't sustain it. He can't fund his addictive habit. And he'll stand on the highway, and he'll steal. That's the Ben Sora Umura. Very strange parsha, according to one opinion in the Gemara. Lehoyev Lenivra never happened. It's just there to teach us, to expound on educational themes. But the Rashi says, what is the whole concept of the Ben Sora Umura? Higia Tur Lesoif Daitoi. We look at him not at now, but what's going to be in the future. And better he dies innocent than guilty at this stage. That's what the Ben Sora Umura is. The difficulty that many Mefarshim grapple with is in a few weeks' time, it's Rosh Hashanah, and we lay in on Rosh Hashanah, we lay in about Yishmael. And we take exactly the opposite assessment of Yishmael. Take a look, bottom box. Vayishmael Elokim es kol hanar. Do you remember the beginning in Parshas, I think it's in Parshas Vayera. HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to the voice of Yishmael. Vayikra Malach Elokim el hanar el hogar, so min hashamayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls, the Malach calls out to Hogar from the heavens. Vayomel Malach Hogar, what's up? Al Tiri, don't be scared. Ki shom Elokim el kol hanar basher hu shom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has heard the voice of Yishmael. Basher hu shom, what does that mean? Says Rashi, basher hu shom. Lefi maisim shehu oseh achshav hu nitne. He is being judged on his current level. V'lo lefi mashu osid lasos, and not what's going to be with him. Because the Malachim in Shemayim were saying, why are you saving Yishmael? This fellow is going to cause havoc to the Jewish people. He's going to kill your children, the Bnei Yisrael, in the future. You're now going to try and save him? HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Achshav Mahu, right now. What is he? Tzadik or Rasha? Amr Tzadik, right now he's a Tzadik. We're judging him according to his current status and not what is going to be. So what's going on? When it comes to the Ben Sora Mora, we judge him based on the future, not now. And when it comes to Yishmael, it's Basher Hashem. What's the difference? So there's different answers. One year, I think we gave an answer of this Marsha. The Marsha in Rosh Hashanah, Tezayin Amud Beis, the top of the next page, it says, Ben Sora Mer Nidan Hashem Sofo. Ayn Tiruzzi quotes the Reb Mizrahi. V'oid Yeshleim Ad Ben Sora Nidan Hashem Sofo Shel Atzmo. Ma She'en Kein B'Yishmoel Al Shem Sofo Shel Bonov Lo Nidan. In other words, the difference is this. The Ben Sora Mora, I'm judging him on his future. Give it a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, he is going to be in big trouble. But when it comes to Yishmoel, it's not him. It's his descendants. Ah, that's very different. That's an answer I think we gave him. And that's why, by the way, it's very meduik in the Pasuk. It's Basher Husham. It's where he is. Good. I came across a different answer this year in the name of Yisrael Salanta. Let's take a look at this beautiful piece. V'kvar omad al-maduch zud. I saw this in a lovely sefer called the Sitcha Elyon. And he quotes this, and this is the extract from the Gilyon called Kol Torah. V'kvar omad al-maduch zu hagon b'Yisrael smisalant. The omnom. Ein donem es ha'odom el lefi matzov ba'is ha'shah. The truth is, we only judge a person on where he is right now. V'lo b'mashe osed lios, so not what he's going to be in the future. Avol b'mad dvar mamurim, when is this true? She'ein ha'maisim sheba'is ha'shah machrichim es ha'matzov she'el osed lovoi. So long as the conditions that he finds himself in now are not going to facilitate or force a future position. Ava ben Sora Mora na'a reiko poches. A ben Sora Mora is a young, impetuous young man. She'u kva goine v'zoil el boso. He's already stealing. V'shoy se yayin etzom, and he's drinking gluttonously. Hari ma'isa shel achshov, his current actions, yoviu oiso behechrich l'lasem es abriyas v'yom es chayev. He is living in a world where his whole life, his whole technical setup, his current circumstances are pushing him in this trajectory. It's not a question of the future, it's a question of now. His current life is just pushing him this way. שכבר השחיס דרכה לאורץ, והוא נדן באיס השאל שם סופה שעמד מעכשיו לא ולאח הזמן. His current way of living is just pushing him in this way. So he's currently involved in all these actions. And therefore, לפי זה, יש להספוינן הרבה. A person has really got to think about this. שעודם עומד בראש שלנו יום הכיפורים. A person stands ראש שלנו יום כיפה. ובויתח בעצמו שיוצא זכאי בדיני. And a person is confident about himself that he's going to emerge victorious in din. Mitam basheu sham, because right now, I'm davening in shul on Rosh Hashanah. I'm in a good place. Aval yesoid hagon b'sro misalant, but according to this principle of b'sro salant, sorich livdek harbe in boliday midze kazu, a person has got to really think very carefully. Is there anything within me right now? K'shetvi'ehu l'maisa gorua she'ischayev bo'inish, because my life circumstances or my middas are such that could lead me in a way which could cause some sort of destruction, middas or situations that are right now causing me to do things which I shouldn't be doing. For Ozla is Chashves Bashehu Shom B'maisa, so Bashehu Shom is not quite true. Ela Kashehu B'machshova Shevada Tviyo De Maisa V'dinu Ka'isa Maisa Kva Mi'achshov. I'll give you an example. Yeah, my wife always calls it technical setup. Yeah, I'll give you an example. You have a young man who's addicted to his phone. So whatever that could lead to. So it could be Chil Shabbos problems, it could be seeing inappropriate sites, whatever it may be. So the technical setup is that if he has no safeguards in his house, where the parents crazily would allow him to take this phone and use the phone without filters or unrestricted, or allows him, you know, they hand phones in the evening after, you know, 10 o'clock or whatever the time is. So the kid's going to take the phone to the room, it's going to be next to his bed on Shabbos, and it's going to be flashing and beeping and who knows what, then the temptation is so much stronger. The technical setup has failed. If before Shabbos or before he goes to bed, he leads the phone downstairs or whatever, that's the rule in the house, then the technical setup is saving him from doing things we shouldn't be doing. And therefore, Bashel Hashem, right now he's not doing anything. But if the technical setup is there, that it's going to lead to it, then that's considered a negative Bashehu Shom. The whole setup is setting him up for failure. That's what it means. So the difference is, what is the Bashehu Shom? The Ben Soro Mora, he's right now involved in a lifestyle which is leading him down this way. The current lifestyle is the problem. The gluttonous drinking and the eating and everything else, which is leading him down this way. It's a current technical setup, which is problematic. The Bashehu Shom is the problem, as opposed to Yishmael, because right then it was clear that the Bashehu Shom, right at that moment, he was innocent. That's the difference, which is a very important, you know, concept to think about, especially as we approach Rosh Hashanah. Let's time for one quick final idea. This I saw in the writings of Rabbi Frand in his Parsha Vat. He says a beautiful idea. In the Parsha, like I said, there are many mitzvahs. One of them is Lo yechli geval isha. A woman can't wear men's clothes. Lo yilbash geval simlas isha. A man can't wear women's clothes. Beged isha. Ki sovas Hashem lekecha kol oisa eile. Okay, a well-known halacha from this week's Parsha. Sefer Shoftim. We come across the case of Ya'el, yeah, the case of where Ya'el kills Sisera. The Pasuk says in Shoftim, when we're in the famous Shiras Tevora, Tevorach Minoshim Ya'el, that Ya'el is blessed more than all the other women. I think Medrash says it's talking about the Imohis. Eishes Chever Hakeni Minoshim Bo'el Tevorach. Okay, that she's praised very extensively. Says the Pasuk a little bit later, Perek Hei Pasuk Chaf Vav in Sefer Shoftim, Yoda liyoseit tishlachna. She took the peg, the tent peg of the tent. Sisera was the general of Canaan, and he was fighting against the Jewish people. His enemy had lost. Barak, who was the leader of, or the general of Klal Yisrael, under Devorah, the prophetess, he was victorious over Canaan, and Sisera escaped. And he ran away. And Ya'el saw him run away. She brought him into his tent. She gave him drink and milk and whatever. He fell into a deep sleep. And says the Pasuk, Yod liyose tishlachna. She took the tent peg, v'yamina lahalmus amelim, etc. And she basically drove it into his head and killed him. end of that famous episode with Ya'al and Sisera. Says the Yalkut Shemoni, the Medrash, unbelievable Yalkut. Zeu she'oma ha'kos of yodeh ha'shilcha ba'kishra. That which we say in Eishes Chaya on Friday night, the last chapter in Mishlei, yodeh ha'shilcha ba'kishra, that she, her hand, the Eishes Chaya, the woman of valor, she, her hand holds on to the kishar. The kishar is what's called a spindle. It's a piece of wood which a woman uses for weaving. What is that referring to? Says the Medrash, Zu Ya'al. It's referring to Ya'al, famous Ya'al. Shelo hargoso b'kizayin ele b'yesed. That when she killed Sisera, she didn't use a sword. She used a yesed, a ten peg. Tichsiv yodo l'yesed tishlachno, which is the pasuk I just read. Ask the Medrash, why didn't she use a sword? You know, Sisera is lying there. He's got his gun, he's got his sword, he's got ammunition with him. Wouldn't it be easier just to take out his sword and kill him there and then? Why did she go to out of the tent or get whatever, take the tent peg out of the ground and use a tent peg? That seems a bit of a clumsy, inconvenient way of killing him. Says the Medrash, why did she not use a kli zayin, the sword of Sisera? Says the Medrash, because she was worried that maybe this is a problem of beged ish, that a woman shouldn't wear men's clothes. Maybe this is considered not just clothes, but a sword is considered men's apparatus. She didn't want to take it. Really? That seems a little bit strange, a little bit extreme. Why didn't she use the sword? If she would have called any rav, if she would have had Shaila text, and said, I'm in the tent now with Sisera. Yeah? Can I take his sword and kill him? Yes or no? I don't know for certain, but I would imagine 99.9% of the respondents on Shiloh text would say, kill the guy. However which way, just use his sword, kill him. What about Pikuach Nefesh? There's lots of heterim you can come up with. But yet, Ya'al was concerned about it. She took the tent peg and killed him. What's the message? The message is that the real barometer of a person is how they behave under duress. And if they're still mindful of halacha in very pressurized, difficult situations, that speaks volumes about who they are. So Ya'al, despite being in a very pressurized situation, the arch enemy of Klal Yisrael is in her tent. She has an opportunity to kill him. And what's going through her mind? Do you think using the sword is kliyusha? Is begadish? And therefore, she errs on the side of caution. She takes the tent peg and kills him with that. A fascinating concept. The real barometer of who the person is how are they mindful of halacha even under very pressurized situation, even under duress. Astonishing. So there we have three ideas in this week's parasha. Number one is the value of human life. Why is it that our parasha begins, Kiseisa al-Mechol al-Avecha, a continuation of the theme of war, the end of last week's parasha, but slipped in the middle is Egla Rufa. What's that got to do with anything? Why is it that the four exceptions, those three, seemingly strange exceptions, planting a vineyard seems a bit strange, and second of all, third of all, why make them come and then go back? The Teretz is, the whole point is to try and help us focus on the value of human life. And therefore, we have Egla Rufa, which even this unidentified corpse we're going to take care of, because one loss is tragic. And we therefore bring them there to the battleground to send them home again. The message is not for them, it's for the people who stay behind. This is the value of human life. We're focusing on building and not destroying. This is really what's important. Go home, build your homes, build your vineyards. Then we discuss the Ben Sura and Moreh, what is the difference between him and Yishmael. So we saw the Marsha. The Marsha says, because the Ben Sura and Moreh, it's him, it's his future. As opposed to Yishmael, it's not him, it's his generations, it's his future descendants. That's the Mashal's answer. But the Rishra's answer talks about the Ben Sura Moreh, his current life setup is problematic. That's the issue. And then finally, this concept of Ya'al, that how she lives according to halacha, even under duress, even under pressure, that's the real barometer of an Eishes Chaya. Okay, thank you for joining us. Be well.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.